And now it is my pleasure to introduce Bobby B. from Ephrata.
How you guys doing? My name's Bobby, and I am an alcoholic. I'm already getting a little off topic, but I was thinking about the different ways that people introduce themselves. You know, one guy introduced himself as a recovered alcoholic. I introduced myself as an alcoholic, you know, and when I first came in, the guys that always stuck out to me were these people, and you know who these people are, right? And they introduced themselves as, I'm so-and-so, and I am a grateful recovering alcoholic, right? And that offended me, right? I was not happy to be here, right? And these people have the gall to say they are a grateful recovering alcoholic, right? You don't understand, I'm homeless, right? I am not grateful to be here. And they just smile and nod their heads and tell me to keep coming back. And I understand that today, you know. The beating I was given by alcohol is a blessing in my life today, you know. If it were not for alcohol and the beating it gave me, I would not be here in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? If I was not here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have never sought a higher power, and that higher power may not have given me the wonderful life that I have today, you know. And so I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. It's interesting you guys read the set-aside prayer. I get really nervous anytime I speak. I've had the pleasure, the opportunity to get up here quite a few times in the last few years, but every single time I'm terrified, right? I'm worried what you guys are going to think about me, or I'm going to say the wrong thing and it's not going to go well. And so every time I pray before I come up here, and I always say the same thing. I say, God, for the next hour, have my words be yours, right? Just keep me out of the way, right? Have it be your message and not mine. And I think that's very important for two reasons, right? One, if you get something out of my message tonight, right, if you feel here, if you leave here, and you're feeling a little bit more hopeful, right, you feel like there might be a solution to your problem, like you're not alone, that's not me, that's God, so thank him and not me, right? It also means that if this goes terrible and I curse a bunch of times and then awkwardly walk off stage, that's God too, that's not me, so talk to him, right? I'm not trying to hear it. I think it's important the message that I carry to you guys, right? I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 2002 when I was 17 years old. My sobriety date is in 2010, and I've heard a lot of messages along the way, right? The first messages I heard weren't even from AA, right? It was from my mom, you know? My mom would be crying, and she'd say, Bobby, I love you. I love you. You know that you're killing yourself. You know that you're killing me. Please, please, why don't you stop drinking, right? And I love my mom, right? And I'd look at her, and she's crying, and I would say, okay, you know, I'm going to stop drinking, right? I'm going to stop drinking. I want to stop killing you. I want to stop killing myself. And I meant it, right? I meant it with everything in my heart. I love this woman. I don't want to hurt her anymore, so I'm going to stop drinking. And then I'd get drunk, you know. I would go to my probation officer, right, and he would say things like, Bobby, you know if you get drunk one more time, I'm locking you up, and this time I'm throwing away the key, right? And I'm not built for jail, so I was terrified, right? Like, please don't throw away the key. Please don't lock me up, right? I'll do anything. I'll do anything. I won't drink at least until I get off, right? And I meant it, right? I was terrified, and I didn't want to drink, right? I would muster all the willpower I could, and I would promptly get drunk. Interestingly enough, I came into AA in 2002, and again, people would say things to me, and they would say things like, Bobby, it's the first drink that gets you drunk, right? They would say, Bobby, don't drink and come to meetings, right? Bobby, just wait till midnight, right? You can get through just 24 hours, and then I would get drunk. You know, these people were very well-meaning, my mom, the PO, these people in AA when I first came in, right, but they didn't have a solution to my problem. All they had was frothy emotional appeal, right, and it didn't suffice. I remember the first man that carried a message of depth and weight, and he came up to me and he said, Bobby, I love you, and I have a solution to your problem, right, and I'll get back to him in a little bit, but I'm going to try to carry the message tonight that he carried to me, right, and that's AA, the big book, and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? A little bit about myself. I grew up on the main line. I grew up with my mother, my father, and my sister. Some wonderful people, right? My dad's a good dude. He provides for the family. Childhood was okay. My mom, she is just the most wonderful, beautiful, amazing woman in the whole world, right? She runs around all day. She skips. She's got cartoons in her head. She's singing for no reason whatsoever. She's great, right? Just happy to be alive. Definitely not one of us, right? And my sister, every time I think about my sister and I come up here, I think about the same incident, right? Me and her, when I was about 18 years old, had gotten in a really bad argument, right? And I love my sister, but I was really mad. And later that evening, I tried to kill myself. And she was the first one to the hospital. And she comes in and she says, "Bobby, I love you, right? Why would you do this to yourself? How could you hurt yourself?" And I said, "Emily, I did this because of you, and when I get out of here, I'm going to do it again, and this time it's going to work, and my death is going to be on your hands for as long as you live," right? I hated myself. I hated my life, right? I was in so much pain, and I didn't know how to get out of it, you know? That isn't how it started, right? I didn't have my first drink and then want to die, right? I didn't have my first drink and then, like, the cops jumped from behind the bushes. I had my first drink and it was cool, right? It was okay. It made me feel good. It was amazing, actually, right? To go my whole life walking around with untreated alcoholism and not know it, and then to get relief for the first time in my whole life, it was wonderful. And so I wanted to do it again. I remember the first time I drank was with my dad. And we were on a camping trip, right? And it was great, you know. But I was 8 years old, and I couldn't really get alcohol any other time. And so I really looked forward to these camping trips, right? And I would go, and all my cousins would go with me, and they were about the same age, right? And the moment we got there, like, I had, like, a game plan, right? Like, I had a notebook of, like, where the coolers were going to be and, like, how we were going to get into them. And, like, they really just didn't get it. They were like, "Okay, you know, if they let us drink tonight, we'll drink. You know, if not, you know, we'll go do other stuff. We'll look at snakes or bears or whatever." And I'm like, "No, like, we're going to get this thing. Like, I got the notebook. I got the plan. Like, we're going to figure it out." And what I didn't understand is that alcohol did something very different for them than it did for me, right? I didn't have the words to articulate that at all at that time. All I knew is that it did something for me that I needed very badly, right? And so I drank as often as possible. At 8 years old, I could not walk into the liquor store and get served. I didn't know the dude on the corner selling the other stuff. But as soon as I could do those things, I did them, you know. By 11 or 12, I was a full-blown alcoholic. By 12 or 13, I'd picked up some other habits that you know, went a long way to accelerate my bottom, right? And life was good for a while, right? I had a solution, and it was very effective, you know? No matter what came up in my life, right? Real problems are imagined. It was the answer, you know? I was uncomfortable in my own skin. Cool, right? I was prey to misery and depression. Cool. I was restless, irritable, and discontent. Cool. Like, I had a solution, and it worked for a while. I go through middle school, I go through high school, and things are fine, and so I'm throwing this really big party, right? I've just graduated high school, and so we have this big party at my house, and my house is like the drinking house, and my sister, who's 16, says, "Can me and some of my girlfriends come drink with you guys, you know, me and all my 18-year-old buddies?" And I said, "Your girlfriends? Absolutely, right? You bring all your girlfriends over, we're going to get them as drunk as possible, and we're going to have a wonderful, wonderful time, right?" And we did, and it was cool, you know? They go home about 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're sleeping at the neighbor's house just down the street, and so they walk home, and on their way home, all these 16-year-old girls get stopped by the cops. And they said, "Have you girls been drinking?" And they said, "Yes." They said, "Where'd you get the alcohol?" And they said, "Me." And I was facing 23 counts of providing alcohol to minors at 18 years old, right? I was in a lot of trouble. But that was okay, right? I had a solution, and so I continued to drink. I don't know if any of you guys have been involved with the legal system, but if you have, you can attest that it's very slow, right? And so I get all these charges, and they're hanging over my head, and I more or less get to go on living my life, right, while all this stuff's going. And so I'm going to go off to college, right? And I tell my mom, my dad, "Listen, I was just going through that little alcoholic phase, right? But I'm beyond all that, right? I'm mature now. So I'm going to go off to college, and things are going to be completely different." And I went off to college, and obviously things were not all that different. Right. There was one difference. When I was in middle school, when I was in high school, there was a lot of kids that drank, right? But there wasn't a lot of kids that drank like I did, right? There wasn't a lot of kids that drank in the same fashion that I did. But I got to college, and there was 30,000 kids that drank just like I did, and it was great, right? All day, every day, getting it in, from the moment I wake up to the moment I passed out, frat parties and kegs and all this wonderful stuff, right? It was like Disneyland for me. It was perfect for about a month. I don't know when it happened. I don't know if it happened at birth or in the womb or at 8 years old when I had that first drink or somewhere along the way. But at some point, my drinking had crossed the line, right? I was no longer drinking for the same reasons that normal people drank, right? I was drinking strictly for the effect that it produced within me, you know. And the funny thing about that is I don't need a frat party. I don't need a keg. I don't need a bunch of girls around to do that. I need a substance and me and a nice dark room, right? And so about a month into college, my freshman year, I stocked up on all the vodka I could get my hands on, and I went in my room and I locked the door, right? And it was one of the most depressing times in my life. I'm on the fifth floor of this dorm room at this college, and I have this beautiful, beautiful view out the window of, like, this big courtyard, right? And it's, like, spring, or I don't know what time of year it is. It's nice out, right? And everybody's out there, and they're playing, like, volleyball and frisbee and, like having this amazing time, right? And there's all these kids out there, and, like, they're starting families, and they're getting careers, and, like, they're moving on with their lives, and they're getting all these wonderful things that I want so badly, and I'm sitting there in my room with vodka waiting to die, you know? And I thought that that was the best that I could do. Right. I wasn't okay being an alcoholic. I wasn't happy to be an alcoholic, but I was resigned to being an alcoholic, right? I thought that the very best that I could do, and up till that point, the very best that I could do was to sit in my room waiting to die, you know. While I was up there, I got another underage charge, and so I called my parents up, hey, I need to come home, you know, I need to get better, whatever, and I go home. I go in front of the judge for all those all the charges that I had, and the judge was a pretty cool guy. He saw me for what I was. I wasn't like a mass murderer, like this terrible criminal. I was an 18-year-old who got drunk with some 16-year-olds, and he let me off very light. He gave me 5 years probation and 90 days house arrest. I've been in much, much worse legal trouble since then, but at that time in my life, it was the worst possible thing that he could have done for me, and here's why. He gives me 90 days house arrest, right? I have to serve this house arrest at my parents' house. My parents now know that I'm an alcoholic, so they remove all the alcohol and everything else out of the house, right? So now I have 90 days to sit in my house with me, my own thoughts, and no solution, right? And that is a terrible, terrible place for me to be, you know? I wake up in the morning completely sober with a pit in my stomach wanting to crawl out of my own skin, right? Restless, irritable, discontent, prey to misery and depression, unable to control my emotional nature, right? On page 52, it lists these bedevilments, right? And it talks about all these terrible things. And that's how I feel when I wake up in the morning dead sober. And now I'm doing it day in and day out for 90 days. I can't leave there and go to the liquor store. I can't have other people stop over and drop stuff off because my parents are on to me at that point. But I am allowed to leave once a week and go to the grocery store. So once a week, I put my book bag on, right, and I walk down to the grocery store, and I go in there, and I steal all the Listerine and cough medicine I can, right? And at 18 years old, I wake up in the morning, and I drink Listerine until I pass out because I don't drink socially. I drink strictly for effect. I will do anything to be okay, right? I will do anything to get that desired effect. And if that means at 18 years old drinking Listerine until I pass out, then it is what it is. After a few months of doing that, that wasn't working so well either, and I decided I needed to end it all, right? My life had gotten so painful that I got to a point where it wasn't worth living anymore. In the big book, it describes it as making the supreme sacrifice. And so I decided after a long day of drinking Listerine, today was the day. Directly behind my house, there was a highway, the turnpike, and I decided at 2 o'clock in the morning, I was just going to walk out in the middle of it. And so I jump a couple fences, and I go through some bushes, and I walk out in the middle of the highway. The funny thing about the highway at 2 o'clock in the morning is there's not a lot of traffic, right? There's there's nobody out there. But at that moment in my life, I was willing to go to any and all lengths to get out of that pain, to feel okay. And so I walked out into the fast lane, and I had a seat. I remember seeing the headlights from the bus, and you can see it like all the way on the horizon, like far away, and it's moving closer and closer, and I wish I could tell you that I had some spiritual experience, right, that like I got up and like knew that I had to get sober and like God started working in my life, or that like I had this drastic revelation and everything was different, but I didn't. The only thing that I felt was relief, that finally this thing was going to be over. You know, that finally I was going to be out of this pain, that finally I was going to be okay. And that was never the plan, right? My plan when I took that drink at 8 years old was never to like, okay, when I grow up, I want to be like trying to kill myself in the highway. You know, I like the expression, man takes a drink and drink takes the man, right? I take that first drink and the next thing you know, I wake up 10 years later sitting in the middle of the highway waiting for it all to be over, you know? And Thank God, a few hundred feet before it hit me, it saw me, and it swerved out of the way. And I just walked over to the side of the highway and just started crying, you know? Like, I just didn't know what to do. I just want to be okay. I just want to be normal, right? I just want to wake up in the morning and be happy, and I don't know how to get there, you know? Like what do I got to do? The police showed up, and they took me from there to my first psych ward. If you haven't been, it's a wonderful, wonderful experience. You'll meet some very great people in there. It's a good time. And from there, they took me to my first inpatient rehab, you know. And I go into this facility, and it's cool, you know. I'm playing volleyball. I'm going to groups, you know. And the counselors really like me, and I'm doing really well in there, you know. I go into this institution, and, like they say, like, Bobby, like, when you get out of here, you're going to drink? And I think about it for a second. I say no, and they say, that's the right answer, right? You're going to be okay. And, like, I'm filling out all the worksheets, and, like, I'm checking all the right answers, you know. And, like, I got this thing. And, like, the counselors are like, you are going to be our poster child. You're 18 years old. You're going to get this thing. You are going to be the face of recovery, you know. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be the face of recovery. And, like, I'm going to do great out there. And, like, they give me my little sheet at the end. And it says, prognosis, good. Bobby's going to do good. He's going to get this thing. He's going to be recovery. And I got drunk within 2 hours of leaving. You know, they didn't understand, right? They don't understand. They kept telling me that alcohol was my problem, right? They kept telling me, don't you see how much alcohol is killing you? But what they didn't understand is what I feel like when I don't drink, right? What they don't understand is what I feel like when I wake up every morning with those bedevilments, you know, that restless, irritable, and discontent, that prey to misery and depression, that unable to control my emotional nature, that feeling of uselessness I wake up with every day. And the only thing that I know that's going to make that go away is a drink, and you want me to not drink for the next 80 years of my life? Forget it, right? I'd rather get drunk. And that's what I did. I can only describe the next 7 years of my life as a war story. In the big book, it talks about incomprehensible and pitiful demoralization, right? I had that at 18 years old. You know, I'd hit my bottom, quote-unquote, at 18 years old. I just decided to spend the next 7 years of my life making the outsides look like my insides, right? I destroyed every relationship. I ended up in a lot of sordid places, you know, in a lot of institutions and different centers like that. But none of that matters. Nothing I've really said so far matters, you know. We're not here for our common problem. We're here for our common solution, right? It doesn't matter how you got here, right? It doesn't matter if you had one too many Zimas one night and decided you were an alcoholic and you came in here looking for a solution. And it doesn't matter if you were living under a bridge with a needle in your neck looking for a solution, right? We're here for our common solution. And I remember when I would run out of alcohol and money, I would rob people, right? And I would usually rob the people I loved the most first, right? So if I really loved you, you knew the second I was out of money because I was at your house stealing your stuff. And my grandmom was always number one, right? I lied earlier when I was telling my story. I said that my mom was the most beautiful, wonderful lady in the whole world. She's number two. Grandmom is definitely number one, right? She's amazing. When I was a little kid and I was sick, you know, both my parents worked. And so I would go over to her house and she would make me SpaghettiOs, right? And she had the Disney Channel and I didn't have the Disney Channel. So, like, I was faking sick all the time and I was going over there and, like, she was making SpaghettiOs and let me watch the Disney Channel. And she's just amazing, right? Just an awesome woman. And so I'm rooting through her underwear drawer looking for what I'm looking for, right? And I found it. And this time it's different. I pull it out and there's a note on the side of the bottle. And it says, Bobby, I'm in a lot of pain, and I really need these to sleep. Please don't take any more. I love you. And, this is the SpaghettiO woman, right? This is the woman I love more than anything in the world. I would never do anything to harm this woman. I love her, right? And I'm sitting there, and I decide, right? I decide I'm not going to do it. I decide, you know what, I'm not even going to get sober today. I'm just not going to hurt this woman, right? I'll go rob a neighbor or something else. I'll do anything but hurt this woman. And that was my first experience with the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I did what I always did and I took it anyway, right? I'm powerless. I am 100% completely powerless over alcohol, right? I put one in me and I need the second one. I leave an institution with 30 days sober. I have not a drop of alcohol in me and that mental obsession comes back and I need that first one, you know? I am powerless. It doesn't matter what I decide. It doesn't matter what I decide to do or hurt or don't hurt or take or don't take. When it says jump, I jump, you know? And it said take them, so I took them. I did not get sober that day. But something did click, you know. It was readily apparent just how powerless I was, you know. I could play it off for a lot of years that I was deciding to drink on a daily basis or that it was still fun to me. But at that moment, it was evident to me that I no longer wanted to drink and I was going to continue to drink anyway despite my best efforts, you know. And so my parents, you know, they call me up one day, and I've been homeless for a while, and they say, Bobby, this is what we're going to do. You're going to move back in, and we're going to give you a bunch of fluids and water and food and stuff, and you're going to stop all that drinking business, right? You're going to recover. And I said, cool, Mom and Dad, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to move home and drink fluids and not drink. And so I move home, and I'm drinking water by the gallons, and I'm still getting loaded. It's just a mess, you know. And so my mom says, you know, you got to go to rehab. You got to go to rehab. And I do what I always do, and I left and I got drunk. And I woke up the next morning at some girl's house I was out on a run with in a pile of my own fluids. And it clicked. Every day for the rest of my life was going to be exactly the same, right? With all the willpower I could muster, the best effort that I had in me not to drink, the very best that I could do is wake up in my own fluids hoping to die. And I called my mom up and I said, you know what, I'll go back to treatment, right? And so I go back into treatment. Mind you, I had been to treatment quite a few times at this point, you know, but for the first time in my whole life, I go in there just slightly open-minded, right? I'm going to listen to what you people have to say, you know? And I go in there, and it's fun, you know? I'm playing volleyball, and it's cool. The counselors are really good, and they're telling me a lot of good stuff. But more importantly, there's these speakers that come in every night, right? These AA speakers, and they come in. And they share these stories, and they share these stories that sound just like mine. They share about the pain of drinking and wanting to stop but not being able to stop. But then they take it a step further, right? And they talk about this solution working in their lives. And they talk about, like, these happy, wonderful, content lives they have, you know? And I can't even hear what they say, but I see these people. And, like, I swear to God, they almost levitate as they're coming in the room. Like, they're happy. Their eyes are glowing. Like, these people are content. And I couldn't have been further from that, you know? And I wanted what they had. So I started doing some of the things they asked me to do, you know. They told me when I left there to go to meetings, and so I did. I went to meetings every day. They told me to share at those meetings, so I did. They told me to get a sponsor, and so I did that too, you know. And I called them up, and I called them up every day, and I said, hey, sponsor, it's Bobby. I'm doing great over here, right? 60 days sober, life is wonderful, don't worry about me. I'm definitely following the directions you're telling me to do, you know. And I go to the meetings, and I say, Bobby, Alcoholics Anonymous is great, right? You guys should do it. It's so much fun. Like, it's so cool over here. It's definitely working in my life. I'm definitely happy. Please don't talk to me after the meeting because everything's wonderful, right? And I even go to an institution with 90 days sober, right? And I share my story like I'm doing now with 90 days sober to all these patients in the institution. And I say, you know, Bobby, alcoholic, AA is great. It's working wonders in my life, right? It's going to save you because it's saving me. I got this so you can get this, right? Everything's cool over here. And I got drunk the next day because I was a liar. I was full of it, you know? I don't put down a drink and magically my life gets all better, right? I don't go to a few AA meetings and call a sponsor that I'm not going to follow a single one of his directions and all of a sudden recover, you know? I put down a drink and this thing turns back on. You know, the fear comes back, the resentment comes back, all that stuff comes back, and I was too scared to get honest with anybody, you know, about how I was actually feeling and how I was actually doing. So I went back out for another week. A week later, I woke up in that institution with those same patients I had just spoken to a week prior, right, and it was humiliating. It was embarrassing. There was this guy, Paul, that worked there. He's still sober today. He just celebrated 10 years now, And I was a regular client of theirs, you know, a repeat customer. And he says, Bobby, what are you going to do this time? And I said, Paul, I will walk to Alaska and believe in the Easter Bunny if you can get me out of this pain. And I meant it, you know. I was broken. I was humiliated. I was beat down. And if you feel that way, that's awesome because that's exactly where I needed to be. I know that it does not feel that way at this moment, but that's exactly where I needed to be willing to do everything they asked me to do, you know, and that was the beginning. The first thing that he asked me to do was pray. I didn't know why I was praying or what I was praying to. I had no conception of a higher power whatsoever. All I knew is that this guy was 5 years sober and he was happy. I was about 6 hours sober and I wanted to kill myself. And so he said, pray. And I said, you got it, right? I've prayed every morning and every night since. I haven't had a drink since. He told me to do a lot of other things. He told me to go to recovery house, right? Now, I don't know about you guys, but I'm not big on like living with 16 dudes, right? I'm definitely not big on like my chore being the bathroom after 15 of those dudes just went in there and like shaved all over and just left it all over the place, and now I gotta clean it up or get kicked out of the house, right? It's just not my thing. But I was willing, you know? So they said go, and I went. Two men that were in that house with me are actually in my wedding party, you know, coming up here. I ended up spending almost a year there, and it was one of the best years of my whole life. You know, it was an amazing experience, and I'm glad I didn't miss it. And so, look, here I go. You know, I'm leaving the institution, and, like, everything's about to get great, right? Because, like, I'm following some suggestions, and so, like, here comes the Bobby Parade and, like, the rainbows and the butterflies, and, like, everything's about to be cool, you know? And I get out of there, and it goes exactly that way for about a week. You know, and then a week into it, you know, real life sets in. And to make a long story short, I go into this recovery house, and they give me my first drug test, and I fail it. They say, you know, we kind of think you're doing the right things. Let's give you another one. I fail that one, too. They send me to the hospital, get blood work done, and I fail that, too, you know. And so I'm lost, you know. They kindly ask me to get the hell out of the house, and I'm completely lost, you know. Here I am, you know, I'm 35, 40 days sober, whatever it is at the time, you know. I'm legitimately doing all the right things, I swear to God, to this day, right? I'm doing the right things, I'm doing what they asked me to do, I'm going to meetings, I'm staying sober, and I'm homeless again, you know. I was told that if I'm ever really struggling with anything, to go to a meeting and share about it, right? Let some guys know. And so I go to this meeting, and I drive up, and I can't even walk in the door, you know. I see you people in here, and you just don't understand. Right? You just won't relate to what I'm going through, you know? All these happy people with their cars and their houses and their lives, they just won't understand what I'm going through. And so I sit in the car, and I just start crying. I just start crying, and more importantly, I start praying, right? For the first time in my whole life, I start praying with some purpose, right? I'm not saying, God, give me a house or give me a car or give me a girlfriend. I'm saying, God, just show me what to do, and I'll do it. God, I am so lost right now. Please, just help me. And after a few hours of crying and praying, the recovery house manager called me up and said, you were having seizures and detox. Some of the meds might have come up. You're welcome to move back in. And the God, as I understand him, my higher power, right? He's not the type of God that, like, he hears my prayers and then he, like, gets up on his cloud and throws a lightning bolt at the recovery house manager and, like, he makes the call. That's just not how my God works, right? But I can tell you that he restored me to sanity for those couple hours to the point that I didn't drink, right? Alcohol had been my solution my whole life. And there I was, at least for a few hours, restored to sanity. And that was my first experience with step two, you know? So, like, I'm a little bit more than halfway through now, and I've seen a lot of wonderful, wonderful speakers, and I know the deal, right? Here's where I tell you that I got a new car and a new house and, like, a bunch of girlfriends, and, like, everything was cool, right? And that's just not my experience, right? I moved back into the recovery house, and things don't magically get all better again, right? I moved back into the recovery house, and I'm following the rules, and I'm going to meetings, and I get a job, and things on the outside are great, and I'm miserable. You know, again, restless, irritable, discontent, right? I'm just not happy. And days are going by, weeks are going by, and I know something's got to give, right? God only gives me so long of a grace period before some real work has to be done in my life, you know? And I'm getting towards the end of that, and I tell my buddy, listen, dude, like, I think I'm going to drink again. I think I'm going to go back out. I think I'm going to throw this all away. And he says, Bobby, do you have a sponsor, and are you working the 12 steps? And I said, I got a sponsor, I think he knows my name, I'm not totally sure, right, but I'm definitely not working the 12 steps. And he said, Bobby, alcohol is not your problem, it's your solution. Until you find one that works better, you're going to continue to get drunk. And I said, okay, that sounds really good, right, probably in a book or something, but I'm 90 days sober over here and I'm crazy, just tell me what to do. And he says, go to a meeting, get your hand up and get a sponsor. And I said, cool. And so do I go to a meeting, you know, and it's probably about the size of this one, and I go in there, and I give him my little spiel, and I say, I'm Bobby, I'm an alcoholic, I'm 90 days sober, whatever it is over here, I'm dying, somebody help me, and I'll never forget that meeting for as long as I live, because not a single person came up to me, you know, and I'm sitting at that bench outside, and I've never felt so alone in my whole life. If you see someone, that's new in here, and you know what they look like, right? You know what these new people look like. Go up to them after the meeting and say hello, right? It might just save their life, you know? So I'm sitting there, and I'm all by myself, and I don't know what to do, and I call my buddy up again, and I say, listen, dude, I did what you told me to do. I went to the meeting, I shared, no one helped me. And he said, you ever go to the liquor store and it was closed? And I said, sure. And he said, you ever go to the dude on the corner, he didn't have what you wanted? And I said, sure. And he said, I bet you got drunk that night. I said, dude, you don't know me. I got drunk every night, right? I could wake up in Alaska with a wooden nickel, and I would find a way, I would do it. And he said, that sounds great. Do it for your recovery. And I said, okay. You know, I knew exactly what he meant. I went to another meeting that same day, and I got my hand up, and I did my whole spiel all over again, right? I said, I'm Bobby. I'm an alcoholic. I'm dying over here. Somebody help me. Somebody please help me. And I'll never forget that meeting for as long as I live either. Because the next person that came up to me was an 82-year-old man in a wheelchair by the name of Bill Wright. And I've told my story hundreds of times, and he chokes me up every time. This man got his hand up, and he said, I'm Bill. I'm an alcoholic. I'm 82 years old. I'm 23 years sober. I'm sitting here in this wheelchair. I'm not here to meet girls. And he said, I'm here to love you until you love yourself. He said, I'm here to provide you a solution to all your problems if you allow me to show it to you. And I get choked up because that's exactly what that man did, you know. That man became my first sponsor. He took me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous out of the big book, and he saved my life. I'm meeting up with this man, you know, and like I have this little beat up old convertible, right? And when he's not in the wheelchair, he's got a walker. And the only way I can get it in the car is to put the top down, get him in, put the walker in, put the top up, and it's snowing and it's raining and it's going into my car, and like he's taking me to like McDonald's, and like both of us are broke, and so like we're ordering off the dollar menu, like, and I'm way too afraid to tell him, like, I don't even have a dollar for the dollar menu. It's just a mess. And we're reading out of this book that I just don't understand, you know. We're reading all these words that were put on paper in 1939, and I have no conception of what they mean, right? And I'm praying to a God that I'm not even sure that I believe in, and the most amazing thing happens. I wake up one morning and I don't want to drink, you know. Not only do I not want to drink, I don't want to not drink either. I wake up in the morning and it's like a Tuesday or whatever, and I'm just like, hey, it's Tuesday, you know? And that's miraculous, right? This thing that has dominated every waking thought of my life for the whole thing since I had that first drink, now all of a sudden that problem is removed, right? I wake up every morning not thinking about drinking or not drinking. It's amazing. Right? Some other really amazing things start to happen. You know, I continue to go through this process, and I get to this fearless and thorough moral inventory, right? And I start to do it, and I'm willing to put a lot of stuff on paper. But there's two things in particular that happened to me when I'm a kid that I'm never going to tell another man as long as I live, right? I'm just too shameful about these things. I would never share them with another human being. What do they have to do with my drinking? And I put them on paper and shared them with this man anyway, you know? I got honest. I got thoroughly honest. For the first time in my whole life, I share with another man exactly who I am and who I am not, right? And it was freeing. You know, it was a beautiful process. I started to be able to have some relationships, right? First with you guys, you know, with AA, you know. I was having these really deep, honest relationships with guys that I just never understood before, you know, on a level I could never have before. With my family, right? My sister, after my suicide attempt, did not talk to me for 7 years, right? And she calls me up when I'm like 5 months sober, and she says, hey, Bobby, can you babysit my puppy? And I started weeping, right? I'm crying, you know. Because that is beyond my wildest dreams, right? I can dream about boats and cars and girls and stuff. I can never dream about being an okay brother. And there I am with this puppy for the whole weekend, right? And I don't know anything about puppies. I'm just trying to keep this thing alive, man. I got it on my lap, and, like, I don't know what it eats, and, like, I'm asking for help, and, like, it was amazing. And, like, I handed her back this puppy alive on Monday, and it was awesome, you know? And it was cool. I don't know that I suggest it, but I got into a relationship in very early sobriety, and I fell in love, you know. She was it. She was the one. And life started getting better. I remember one day in particular, I was 10 months sober, and I was still living in the recovery house, and they had this big barbecue for some holiday. And Like, there's like 200 people there, you know, and they're cooking and eating, and like my friends are there, and like my sponsor's there, and like my girlfriend's there, and like her family's there, and my family's there, and it's wonderful, it's amazing, you know. And I take a step back, and it hits me that like this is what it's all about, you know. I'm happy, I'm of use to others, you know. My life is amazing, you know. And I think it's very important to note that at that time in my life, I'm 10 months sober. I'm living in a recovery house with bed bugs. I'm working at Salad Works making salads for minimum wage. I do not have it going on, right? I had nothing going on. But I was content. I was serene. I was at peace. I was of maximum service to others. And it was amazing, you know. I woke up the next morning, and me and my girlfriend, both in the program, so like, we would go on like these little AA dates, right? And I know it's corny, but I'm a corny type of dude, and it's my story, right? So every Sunday, we would go on these little AA dates, and we would like go to like a meeting out of town together. And so I go over to her place, and she's still sleeping. And so I walk in, and I throw my laundry on the couch or whatever, and I walk over to her bed, and I'll never forget it. You know, like the sun's just coming in just the right way, and like just her beautiful blonde hair, and she's peaceful and just serene and content. And she's dead, you know. She had died in her sleep. Her heart had stopped. Even when everything goes my way, I get drunk, you know. If I have a bad day, I walk in front of a bus, you know. And how am I supposed to get through this, right, giving CPR to the dead body of the person I love more than anything else in the world without getting drunk, you know. And the answer is that I can't, right? That on my own, I'm not much. You know, I'm a drunk and I'm a mess. But at that point in my life, I was not alone, right? I had Alcoholics Anonymous and I had God. And with those two things, miracles can happen, you know, amazing, wonderful things. I was able to go to her funeral, and I'm sitting between my mom and my sister, two women that would have nothing to do with me for most of my life, and they're handing me tissues, you know. Her father had me speak at the funeral because I was a pretty decent boyfriend at that time in my life, you know. Some amazing things got to go on through, like, this terrible, terrible process, you know. Right after it happened, a couple guys picked me up from the rooms, and they took me to a clubhouse, and they called a few people. And within a few minutes, there was, like, 100 people there. And they're bringing me, like, energy drinks and cigarettes and board games and stuff. And, like, they don't have any words of wisdom to make me feel all better, but, like, they can carry me until I can walk again, you know. They wouldn't have let me drink if I wanted to, right? And here's the craziest part. Because of my relationship with God, I didn't want to. Right? You guys gave me a solution that works in any and all circumstances, that removes my obsession to drink regardless of the conditions of my life, you know, and life went on. I'd like to tell you that, like, I was happy and content and, like, wonderful because I was hanging out in AA, but that wasn't the case. I was miserable, you know. It was a very tough experience. And, like, I was definitely questioning a lot of things. First and foremost, I was questioning God, right? Here I am, God. For the first time in my life, I'm doing your will to the best of my ability, right? I'm trying to live by spiritual principles. I'm trying to be a good person. She's trying to be a good person. She's trying to do your will. And you're going to take her, you know, you're going to take her from me, right? And I'm really questioning God. And I'm sharing about it. You know, I'm letting people know where I'm at. And I'm letting people know, you know, how I feel about the whole thing. But no one really seems to have the right answer for me, you know. They're like, they're helping me, but they just don't have the right answer that I'm looking for. And I'm tired of sharing about it. So one day I went to a meeting, you know, a few miles out of town where nobody knew me. And I went to that meeting and I didn't share a thing. You know, I just listened. And this girl shared, and she shared, she was about my age, and she shared that she had 6 days sober, and she didn't know if she could make it through the night without drinking. She thought she was going to go back out again because she just couldn't hang on any longer. I got up from that meeting, and I walked outside, and she was sitting on the bench all by herself with not a single person coming up to her. I said, God, you got me, right? I can't ignore this, you know. I'm going to go talk to her. And I talked to her. I talked to her for the next 2 hours. I didn't tell her about what I was going through or what was happening in my life, but she had a profound impact on me, you know. I've heard spiritual experience, like, a lot of different ways. When I first came in, I remember this one guy's story in particular, and he said his grandmom really wanted him to quit drinking, and then his grandmom died, and his grandmom really loved doves, and then one day a dove pooped on his car, and then, like, he didn't want to drink anymore, right? It was, like, his burning bush moment, right? And I remember listening to this guy, and I was like, that's never going to happen to me for as long as I live, right? And so far, that has not happened to me. No dove has pooped on my car, and God was working in my life, right? I've also heard a spiritual experience defined other ways, right? A complete casting aside of old ideas, emotions, and attitudes that used to dominate us, right? In favor of new ones, ones that really work, you know? I'm sitting there with that girl, and I'm not seeing what I can get out of her. I'm not trying to hit on her. I'm not trying to, like, manipulate her. All I'm trying to do is be of maximum service to her, right? I'm being as honest and tolerant and loving and caring and all those good things that I can possibly be. And that's not me, you know? I am this ball of character defects. I'm selfish. I'm dishonest. I'm fearful. I'm resentful. And here I am being this completely different person, and it clicked that God had been working in my life, you know? I don't know which step I was on. I don't know how many days sober I was, but I know it's somewhere along the way, somewhere during that process, he snuck in there, you know? And I couldn't deny it. I knew at that moment that as long as I stuck close to God and to AA, I would always be okay. And so far, you know, a handful of years later, that's come to be true. I went from there, and life started happening again. You know, life went on. My sponsor told me to go start helping some other guys and carry the message that was carried to me, and it was amazing, you know. It's an amazing process to watch these guys come in, like, trembling, nervous wreck, and see them, like, happy, content, like, living these wonderful, productive lives and helping still others, you know. I understand that it has nothing to do with me, their recovery, but it's amazing to have, like, that front view, like, that front row view of God working in their lives, you know. It's unbelievable. I got to go through with the men's process, and they were like, you know, okay, you got to go back to all these people that, like, you've harmed and you've done terrible things to, and, like, you got to go make it right. And I'm like, listen, you don't understand, man. Like, you might have, like, taken some money out of a basket or something, but, like, I did some grimy stuff out there, you know, and I don't know if I'm gonna be able to face these people. And they said, if you don't want to drink, you better do it. And I said, okay, you know. I, of course, wanted to do the easy ones first, right? I wanted to go back to the people that, like, I knew would just be like, I love you, don't worry about it. And so I did, and so I went to my mom first, right? And I said, Mom, this is my first amend, so listen up, right? I stole a bunch of money from you. and so here I am. I got some money. Here's some money. We're even, right? And she said, Bobby, I got more money than you will ever have. She goes, I don't care about your money. She says, you stole my son from me. She said, the only time I slept was when you were in jails or institutions, because at least I knew you were alive. She said, you stole my peace of mind for decades. She says, I want it back. And I said, damn, Mom, this was supposed to be a gimme. You know what I mean? Like, you're supposed to be the easy one, right? And that ended up being the coolest amends I ever made, right? Because what I did was, for the next 2 years before she moved to Jersey a few years ago, I woke up bright and early, and I met up with her at the gym, and we were gym buddies, and we pumped iron, right, and like, lifted weights and stuff. And I don't know that either one of us ever got into better shape, but I do know that I gave her son back 1 hour at a time, right? I call her every night to this day, and I say, Mom, everything's cool on my end. How are you? I love you. Good night. Right? And I gave her that peace of mind back one night at a time, the same way I stole it, you know, and it's beautiful. My grandma, the SpaghettiO woman, I went back to her, and I I made this amends, you know, and it was cool. It went well. You know, I went with to her with an honest desire to make things right to the best of my ability, and I tried to do that. But it just didn't sit well with me, right? Like, it just, I felt like I still owed her something. I felt like I hadn't cleaned up my side of the street yet. And it kind of bothered me for a couple years, you know, and until a couple years ago, when she had to get some really major back surgery, you know, and she called me up one day, and she was crying, and I was like, you know, are you all right? Are you in pain? And she said, no. She said, Thanksgiving's coming up, and I can't have it here. She goes, it's just too much work. I can't get around. I can't clean. I can't cook. She goes, I just can't do it, you know. And she goes, I don't know what to do. And I said, God, you got me again, you know, because I knew exactly what to do. And so I went over there, right, before Thanksgiving, and I said, I'm going to help you do Thanksgiving, and we're going to have it here, you know. And basically it went like this. She said, okay, clean that, and I cleaned it. She says, okay, cook that, and I cooked it. And she just sat there and pointed, and I did it all, and it was wonderful, right? And I continue to do this to this day anytime I have an opportunity, right? And so I'm able to give her the holidays back one at a time, the same way I messed them up, you know, and it's been beautiful. It's been amazing, you know. All these wonderful things have happened. I got into another relationship. I got into a lot of other relationships. I got into a lot of other really bad, unhealthy relationships, right? And it was rough, you know. I'm going into these relationships, and they're terrible, you know. And I'm a mess, and the other person, you know, is a mess. And, like, I'm sponsoring all these guys, right? And I'm telling them about spiritual principles and being honest and tolerant and loving and practice these principles in all your affairs. And then I'm going into my relationships, and I'm doing none of these things, right? I'm not being honest. I'm not being loving. I'm not being careless. I'm definitely not being selfless to these people, right? And, like, I just know that I'm not walking what I'm talking, right? That I'm saying all the right things and I'm doing none of them. And I know that it's got to stop, you know? And I got to go one way or the other. And so finally I say, you know what? I'm done, right? I'm done with relationships. Girls have cooties, right? Like, it's just not for me. I'm just going to spend some time focusing on me and focusing on God. And I did that. And I took a step back, you know? My first sponsor always told me, like, you're going to find a year in sobriety without a relationship one way or another. So he's like, you can do it now, you can do it later. And I did it later. And so I spent some time, you know, I'm not worried about relationships. I'm just focusing on, like, being a maximum service. And I have a lot of time to sponsor a lot of guys. And, like, it's going well. And I'm happy with that. I'm content. I'm serene. It's amazing, right? When I stopped doing the things that you guys suggested me to do, the promises stopped working in my life, right? All of a sudden, those bedevilments started coming back. When I started again and I started living by spiritual principles like you guys told me to, all those amazing promises started coming true in my life again, you know? And I was serene. I was content. I was at peace. And I'm at work one day, and this beautiful blonde art therapist shows up, and she says, hey, I'm new here. Do you want to go to church? And I said, with you, I definitely want to go to church, you know? And we went to church, you know? Very alcoholically, we were living together 3 weeks later. But it's my pleasure to say it has worked out, you know? We've been together for the last few years. We're getting married in May, and it's amazing, you know? We have kittens. We have two little kittens, right? And they sit on my lap, and I put milk in the thing, and usually it spills on me, but then they drink the milk, and it's just great, right? And I'm a felon, you know what I mean? I run around going to, like, prison and, like, walking in front of buses, and here I am giving milk to kittens. Just couldn't be happier to be doing it. And it's amazing, you know? This thing is a gift. I don't know that I have what you guys want, you know. I don't know that your vision of sobriety looks anything like mine. But I can tell you that if you do the 12 steps as outlined in the big book, miracles will happen in your life, right? It will be a life beyond your wildest dreams, you know. I cannot promise you houses and boats and cars and all those things, but I can promise you serenity, you know, peace of mind, the obsession to drink being removed, and that's a miracle, you know. If someone could have told me the day I walked in here that I'd be one of those grateful, recovering alcoholics, you know, running around with a big book, I would not have believed them. But here I am, me, my kittens, and my big book. So thanks for letting me share.